Wow. Who's full? Who's ready for more? Yeah? Yeah, I am excited to be here. And you know what? It just fills my heart with so much love and joy to look out and see you all are dedicated to get out there and change lives and save lives. It's not just changing lives. You have no idea how many lives you have already changed and you have the potential to change. And you may not realize that you've changed and saved some lives, but it's a ripple. It's such a ripple effect. And going back to my story, when I was just searching for an answer for why I was 25 years old and fatigued and had stomach problems and sinus problems and all these other things. And I was sitting in a gas station reading a book. And it was a health book, like one of the 5-day allergy secret or something like that. And a guy came over to me and said, "Oh, you're interested in health." And I said, "Yeah." He said, I'm trying to solve my own health problems. He goes, "Oh, wow, you need to fast." And I looked at him and I said, "You know, I've done that. This book, you know, it says 5 days, I've done this fast and it did elimination, but as soon as I start to eat again, I feel like crap." And he said, "Oh, you haven't fasted long enough." And I said, "Oh, I fasted for 5 whole days. And I fasted for 5 days and then I introduced food and I felt like crap again." And he said, "You haven't fasted long enough and you haven't done it right and you haven't reintroduced food in the right way to detoxify your body." And I'm like, detoxify? That was a concept I hadn't read about yet. I mean, this was back in 1984 or 85. It was probably 84 or 85, one of those years. It was 4, 5. Now I know it was 5. Sorry. My mind works and it just keeps going. So I said, "Okay." So he said, "You need to check this out. Get this book." Anybody have an idea of what that book might have been? Anybody? It was "Fasting Can Save Your Life," Herbert Shelton. And I read it, and I was like, toxin. I'm toxic. My whole life has made me toxic. Everything I've done up to this moment, and maybe that's it. I bet that's it. So I did. I ended up going, I got that book, I read it, and it's a little dated at this point, but the concept of toxicity as the root cause of disease was so powerful to me that I went and, in my opinion, I manifested a need for surgery so I could have time off from work so I could go to a fasting retreat. You know how the universe kind of works that way? Like the right thing comes along, and I found myself, I'd gone to this place nearby that, you know, like 40 miles away. I was in San Jose, it was in Gilroy or something like that. And I went there and I went, "I need to come here, but how the heck can I come here for 4 weeks or 6 weeks and do the cleansing I need to do when I have a full-time job?" And as luck, the universe, whatever would have it, I found myself in having emergency surgery for an ectopic pregnancy. Anybody know what that is? Yeah. It's pretty devastating physically, but unlike appendicitis, there's also an emotional, a really deep emotional component to it. And I was like, "Oh," they said, "you have to be off of work for 6 weeks. We want you to repair, you know." And I said, "Oh." And I said to Scott, "I want to do that." And he said, "Sure, okay." I had to give up a trip to Hawaii to do it. We were supposed to go on a vacation. I said, "I got to go to Hawaii. I can't go swimming. I'd rather go do this." And he did it, and it changed my life. That man, I never got his name. I could never follow up with him. And it gives me goosebumps to think about how many lives were changed as a result of him. I mean, just everybody in this room will be changed in some way by being here, right? And you are going to... So that man, by just reaching out and saying, he wasn't pushing me, he was just offering me something. And that's the stuff you can do all the time. You're in the supermarket, you're in the whatever, you're just subtly, like Laura did last night, you're reading where they are, you're not pushing, you're just creating an environment of trust and making a suggestion. And you've probably already done that and saved a lot of lives as a result of just that. And imagine how many more you save when you're deliberate about it, right? When you're out there and you're not just doing that, but you're also having this amazing practice where people are just like, okay, my friend got great results with you. I really want to work with you. Unlike the samples we had up here, my friend said I should come here, and you're going to get those, yes. But more you're going to get those people who say, my friend said that you're a miracle worker, and you found a source of a problem that she didn't even know she had, and now she's better, and I want that. And then you go through step by step, and you get results. Okay, and it's not going to be easy all the time. And you're going to need support. It's really helpful when you can have people to bounce ideas off of. Get on the phone and say, hey, I've got this client, and she's this and that. What do you think? What would you do next? And then you proceed. And it just, like I said from the start, it just, because when I started doing this in 1985 was when I had my own healing. That was 25 years ago. No, more than that, 28 years ago? Can I do math on stage? 28 years ago? That was a long time ago. And that was, if I invited every person in my town that was a holistic health practitioner to come to an event, we'd have the front row sparsely populated, right? And if I invited everybody that I was open to something different, tired of conventional medicine and knowing and wanting an option to come together. Again, it would be this very small group, but this is a wave, right? And we are here to change the state and the face of healthcare. And you that have come from conventional medicine backgrounds, the nurses, the physician's assistants, and I hear we have a medical pre-med student. Who's that? I heard that yesterday. Hey, welcome. Yes! Yes, before medical school. Honor. So we have that ability not to throw away and not to have that be animosity. It's complementary, right? Awesome emergency care. They haven't quite got it together yet on preventative and just maintenance and stuff like little things that ruin people's lives, like fatigue and fibromyalgia and ADD and depression. Right? That's where you shine. And know that when somebody comes in with a potential broken arm or serious life-threatening infection, that you don't want to wait till the herbs and the food take hold. You want to get them saved, but then you want to help them to prevent that from happening in the future. And that's where the complementary comes in, right? Right? We're not islands. We can't stand alone as an island. But all together, it creates that ripple effect so then when someone goes to the doctor and they're pregnant and they're going to know that. But in the meantime, that's going to be past our lifetimes when everybody in all the medical schools teach this. That's your role here. And everybody's going to be seeking you out because that my goal is to get this bigger, broader, and everybody's looking for it. Oh, who's your nutritional counselor? And it's more than just somebody that says, hey, diet, hey, change your diet and exercise. Just eat less and exercise. How many people have been told that? Eat less and exercise. That's all it takes. No, we saw the complex metabolic pathways, and that works for a lot of folks. And when they have impairments in those pathways, they need some more sophisticated help. And it'll take you a while, you immersing yourself in studying this to really be able to have those pathways come like they come to me, it's taken. But when you can be in a network of others where you can bounce ideas off of, you're going to hear from Michaeline later this morning. She joined my year-long, what's called the Energy Recharge Coaching Program, the first iteration of coaches, and she didn't have a background in medicine. She came from her desire to heal herself, and she learned, and similar to me, and she learned that I need to help other people. And now here she is, she's getting on stage for the first time, so be really supportive of her because I believe in her because she's got the ability to change lives, and every single one of you do. Every single one of you do. Okay? So let's just hear a few, like something you learned yesterday or were exposed to or just changed your perspective or an aha that you had. Does anybody want to share? We have a mic runner? Something that came from yesterday. I know there was a lot. You're shy. One thing. Nobody? Okay, come on.
Okay, so I
Wait for Gretchen or Michelle to come up with the mic.
So I do have my own business called Simply Living Raw, and I think because of my lack of confidence working with people one-on-one, I hid behind corporate work because I didn't have to be my own brand. And then yesterday, something sparked that I've always been meant to do one-on-one because people are attracted to me because I have the skills. I just needed the confidence. And so I'm taking my business in a whole new direction. I have someone working on my website as we speak, and I'm going to touch the world one person at a time and know that I am enough and I have enough energy and I'm an empath, and that scared me a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I can do it. So I thank you all for all the love and support and taking me on my journey. Thank you so much. Mm. And I'm going to be a...
Yay!
And one other thing, I have to say this.
Yes.
I'm so inspired by TTAP. I'm actually going to be an instructor now, so I'm going to do the training. So.
Wow. Thank you. Yay. That's awesome. That's awesome. And all the lack of confidence holds us all back. Lack of confidence held me back from doing this a few years ago. Even though people were asking me, when are you going to teach? I want to learn that. I want to do that. I was like, who am I to do that? Who am I to do that? I don't know any more than anybody else. Why should I do that? And you know, if you just know you're two steps ahead, you can be in profound help. And you might even be a better help when you're two steps ahead of them than if you're 10 steps ahead of them, right? Because you can relate. That whole energy exchange that Laura talked about last night, you can relate better to somebody. Oh, yes, I know how you feel. And this was my experience, and some of my clients did, and this is how they overcame that. And this is how they got results, right? So thank you for sharing that. Now, is anybody else, one more person, have anything to share before we move on? Go ahead. Yes. Just say your name real quick.
I'm May Fazzino, and I have hope that I know I can get my health back. And I've had some real health issues, and I'm just really encouraged with all of this. I know I can do it.
Yes. And I want to encourage you to know you're not alone. You don't have to leave here and say, oh, I learned all this stuff, now how am I going to do it for myself? You've got a room full of people here. Connect with someone that you really feel confident can help you take that to the next level and do it as a team. Standing as an island, for years, that's been my problem, is like I have to do it alone. You know, my mother would say to me, if you want something done right, you have to do it yourself. So, like, okay, so that's all I felt like I needed to do it myself. And you don't. And then a few years ago, when I said, you know, I really want to get this out to larger realm, I know nothing about marketing. I thought marketing was sleazy. You only did that. All I knew was these chiropractic practice management companies. Where's Victoria? She probably knows that. Right? Sleazy. You don't want anything to do with that. You know, let's see, how can you see 100 patients a day? Like, are you serious? 100 patients a day? I can't see 100 patients in a month, right? Well, maybe a month, but not a week or a day. Come on. So that's what I thought about marketing. And then I started to get exposed to people that, like, oh, it's from the heart. It's not marketing. It's helping people say yes to themselves, right? It's not selling them what you have. It's offering them a new possibility and what they can have that they really want, and they're scared. And like when Laura did that on stage, right, and the way she said, and now I have a program that does this, this, and this, is that something that would interest you? And when I shifted around from having that uncomfortable feeling of like, no, I got to get this person to sign up, to, wow, I have this program, and you said you want this and this and this, they would be like, yeah, that's what I want. And sometimes before I even got to that point of saying, I have this program, they'd say, I want to keep working with you. How can I do that? And to the point that I can't do those conversations anymore because I don't have room in my schedule. I don't. Absolutely don't. So Jan handles those conversations and sees, well, what group program can she put them in? But my goal is to have a team of practitioners, of coaches, that we say, oh, she's got a neurologic, you know, brain chemistry kind of thing. Mary's got a PhD and or master's degree in neuroscience, and she's really good with those. Or she's got cancer, and she wants nutritional support. Michaeline has been through that herself. Let's have Michaeline coach with her. Or she's got an issue with children, and who's the ADD who was talking with kids. And, you know, whatever it is that, so I have that, and I know who I can refer to, because I really can't do those conversations anymore. We took it off the website, but people found the sign up for this, and they paid me $200 for a consultation, and they got to the end, they said, we want to work with you, and I'm like, Dr. Jan, I don't have any openings for like 6 or 8 months that I couldn't take anybody on, because I just started a group of one-on-ones within my year-long program, and I didn't have time, and so I don't want to send those people out and have to figure it out on their own, and I don't want to send them randomly to this person or that. I want to be able to have that we can maintain that quality. That's what I'm looking for, really. So that all said, we didn't finish up our segment on the biochemical pathways yesterday, and I want to run you through a lot of that, but I don't want to rush it, but I also don't want to go to the level of detail that I could easily that I love to do. So you've got, we're going to keep going, that we're going to skip over a few. I've got those charts, and I'm just going to pinpoint the highlights, but think of those charts as your reference, and you'll have them as a full page, like the hormone family, what the hormones are, what they do, where they're produced. You'll have that, and I'm just going to hit the highlights of that, because I made those charts pretty complete. Okay, so you'd have that as reference. All right, so, and do I have that here? I just want to show you what we've been working on. They're still in the infancy stages of development design-wise, but we're going to have a card for each of the hormone families. And it's like a cheat sheet. Did you ever, like, you're sitting there going, you're talking to somebody, and you're like, I know that there's a good, and I want to be able to say that, but I don't remember. It's a cheat sheet for each of the hormone families. So on the front, it has the list of the hormones. It has the whole body-wide effect. So what do, you know, even though it's metabolic rate, what does it affect? Obviously, that list is going to be long. And then the labs, summary of the labs you would do to assess that. And then a list of the symptoms of imbalance low, symptoms of imbalance high. So hyperthyroid versus hypothyroid, hyperadrenal versus hypo. And then other assessments and things that you can do or have your patient do, like take home a temperature chart and monitor their temperature. I'm reading the metabolic rate. Having a sluggish Achilles reflex, unless you're doing that and you don't really know how to do that, but a lot of people can do that. Thin, dry hair, cracked nails, things that they can be observing and sharing back to you. And if you're having them there and face-to-face with them, very easy to look at them and do a nutritionally-oriented type of exam, which we'll go over, and you have a template for. So we're going to have one for each of those seven, and we got two of them kind of done right now. But they're going to look all pretty, and there'll be a card stock, and I'm excited about that because that's a reference tool. Do you ever, anybody feel like that? Like you just need a little cheat sheet to have at your desk and go, oh yeah, yeah, right? Which page was that on? Which day did I learn that? What book is that in? Right? I'm going to use them. So let's just take a deep breath. And know that you'll learn everything you are meant to learn right now, and that you'll have the answers for how you're going to learn more. Okay? And as I was saying earlier, I sought out people to help me to get my practice moving, and it was scary because I had to invest in myself. I had to pay money to go to a $5,000 for this program or $10,000 for that program. And a lot of them were generic, right? They weren't specific for health nutrition coaches. They were more like for this business or that business or whatever, and I had to pull out what really applied and learn it. But because I did, my income has increased probably tenfold since 2007 when I started to do that. So the investment that I made came back to me manyfold. And it will. Similar to when you go to a university, like when I went to the university, I'll tell you how old I am. I paid probably $12,000 or $15,000 for my entire college education at NYU. right? You know what NYU is for a year now? $55,000 for 1 year, okay? That's what it costs to go to university. I went to the University of Bridgeport for my my master's in nutrition, and that I don't remember what that cost, but today it costs a whole lot more, right? And I had to throw away, or just not throw away, but just like, okay, don't need that. And I had to sift through it all, say, what do I really need, and how do I make the connection to what's these people sitting in front of me? How much have you learned in nursing school that you like, unless you're in an ER, you do, how much do you really need to know about all the infectious diseases that you can get when you go to Africa? Like, you're not going to remember it unless somebody's in front of you and you're like, have you been in Africa recently? And then you're pulling out the pathology book and the microbiology. So I want you to have at your fingertips these, how these metabolic pathways work in general, so that you go, oh, wow, she's low in T3. I wonder what those hormones were, those nutrients were that help her to convert it. Oh, she does really well on Prozac, but she's concerned about side effects and doesn't want to be on it long term. Let me pull out that. I remember that. That was, there was an amino acid and there was a B vitamin. I don't remember which they are. You pull out your chart and you go, oh yeah, let's see if she needs some of that, right? And it just starts to flow. And that's what I want you to get your thought process going. So we'll go through some of these a little bit quickly, but you'll have it to reference back to. And there's a lot of other ways that I can get this information to you. So this is one of my favorite. This says it's slightly different. It says adrenal hormones at the top because we're talking adrenal. Yesterday we talked thyroid pathways. We started to talk about adrenal. We talked about how there's the medulla and the cortex. And quite frankly, if you don't remember whether it's the cortex or the medulla that produces the cortisol, that's not going to affect you clinically. It may affect you passing an exam in a higher education course, but quite frankly, that's not the piece that's going to cause you to not be able to help a client. Knowing that the adrenals produce cortisol and that there's cortisol is when it's high and when you're under stress, it steals the precursor pregnenolone up at the top, and it doesn't allow you to make estrogen, progesterone, DHEA, aldosterone, and aldosterone. You know what I said yesterday about folks that have adrenal fatigue and they're just like salt craving? It's because of the aldosterone. They're low on aldosterone. Okay? So it's just knowing the concepts. Oh, stealing the do I remember without looking at my chart which comes first? Well, I kind of remember that, but some of the intermediates, no. This is actually a more simplified chart. When you run a 24-hour steroid panel from Meridian Valley, you get the more detailed part, and there's etiocholanolone and blah, 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 all these other things in between. The way I remember them is I pull out the lab result sheet and I go back through it. But I know the general idea, right? We're looking at precursors and downstream metabolites, and if there's a problem in one or the other, then you're going to have an issue with that particular hormone. And how do you fix it? Well, you try to make the pathway above it go faster if it's low, or you make this go less fast. It's really simple. You want more DHEA, and compound A gives you more DHEA, and then from DHEA it moves down to compound B. And if you look at a lab and compound B is super high and DHEA is low, you're like, why is all that DHEA being converted to compound B? You go, wow, what are all the cofactors? Right? And you can always look those up. What is it that causes that? I was dealing with someone who is having very high cholesterol and very low sex hormones. And you're like, well, wait a minute. You got all that cholesterol. What's happening here? What's taking the cholesterol down to the pregnenolone so it can get into that cycle? Oh, no wonder why adrenal protocols say have 500 milligrams of B5 three times a day, because it helps you to make more pregnenolone from your cholesterol. And everybody's about take a statin drug and get rid of the cholesterol. Why don't we make the cholesterol more useful? Make it convert to pregnenolone, right? And then the pregnenolone is the precursor. It gets, some people say pregnenolone, I just say pregnenolone. I'm not sure which the right way to say it is. You say tomatoes, I say tomatoes, doesn't matter. We know the concept. So too much cortisol, too much stress over time drags it down. Low sex drive, PMS, migraines around the period, heavy menstrual flow, lousy symptoms at menopause, all that kind of stuff. Do we just jump in and say, well, what can I do? Let me give her black cohosh and let me, yeah, that can help. Knowing that there's certain herbs that are phytoestrogen and can help bring that up. But really, that's Band-Aid medicine. And do it to get people relief, but know that you want to fix their adrenals, right? You want to fix their adrenals. One of my mentors years ago said, the sex organs do not malfunction in a vacuum. They don't malfunction in a vacuum. They malfunction for a reason. So you got to find out the reason. Yes, you can Band-Aid them. Yes, they may need to stop being suicidal or homicidal, right? You got to help them with that. And I've seen tremendous results with picking the right herbal formulation, Vitex, and we'll go through some of those tomorrow, and there's just lots to learn there. But you got to fix the underlying problem. And I have never seen a person with problems in their sex hormones that hasn't had adrenal problems. I have never seen it. It's always there, okay? And it's a hard one to fix because it's not just, oh, thank you, wonderful health counselor, for telling me my adrenals are messed up. What do I take for that? Right? Oh, yeah, here, take this adrenal formula. Herb Farm has it. Just go to Whole Foods. If just doing that worked, we'd have a really healthy world. But it's not just about that. It's about really, what is that stress? That stress can be physiologic stress, not just mental, emotional. And I've had people who are yogis, and they're all, you know, cool and calm, and we do their little heart math. There's a device you can put them in and see. They're fine. What's going on? Where's that stress? It could be an infection in their GI tract, right? It could be an inflammation in the joint. It could be Lyme disease or Giardia or something that you need to clean the stress. Physical stress, mental, emotional stress, environmental stress. What about people who are living in the house and they're spraying the room deodorizer and they have new carpeting and new paints and they don't realize? I have somebody who's started to have all this nasal stuff and I'm trying to track it down for her. And, well, I didn't have it before I moved to New Mexico into this house. I'm like, oh, okay. So it's those questions. We'll talk about that in a bit. So that's the chart. If you have questions about any of this, what I encourage you to do is write them down and we'll cover them either at the end of this session or tomorrow. We have a Q&A time to just like pull it all together. So just write your question down, because a lot of times your question that you have now is going to be answered a little bit later in my presentation, or we're going to pull it all together tomorrow. And again, stress affects everything, right? Cortisol affects everything. It raises the blood pressure. It turns off the digestion. It closes the valves. So somebody has constipation chronically. If they're chronically stressed, they can have constipation. It affects their respiration rate, obviously. And then you watch people, and sometimes they're just breathing in stress breathing all the time. So it's an observation that you make. So you do a nice breath, like your whole chest rose. It was beautiful. It was diaphragmatic. But I was watching my mother-in-law a couple of weeks ago. I said, she's having problems breathing. What's going on? She's like, right? Watch them. That's real obvious, but sometimes it's subtle, right? Mouth breathing versus nose breathing. They're not going to get their full respiratory. If their nose is stuffed in there, it's not going to be the same. Right? So looking at all those things, all of these things are affected by stress. And it's great in an acute situation, but then you want it to turn off in the not. But people are under stress all the time. Remember who said it yesterday about perceived, I think it was actually a private conversation I was having with our speaker last night, with Mark, and he said it's all perception versus the reality. It's what are you perceiving, right? I have a friend who lives, he's actually a naturopath, and he lives in an area where there were fires a couple of years ago in Austin, and we have a potluck once a month. He came over and said, how are you? Did you escape the fires? And I caught him in a conversation, and he's laughing and joking, and, you know, with somebody, and I said, how'd it go? He goes, oh, my house burned down. And I said, wow, you're pretty calm about it. He goes, well, what good does it do to get upset about it? I built it once before, I'll build it again. That's what, how we want to live life. And like Laura said yesterday about wonder and curiosity, I look at that with stressful things. I Jan has been quoting me for months on that, a blog post I wrote months ago. And it was like, look at, or something I said on a call, look at when there's something stressful happens or somebody in your family does something really dumb and you're like, what, why'd my kid do that? And you're all upset. It's like, huh, wow, I'm really curious. I wonder what he was feeling that prompted him to do something so irresponsible. Isn't that a lot different, right? I wonder why that guy almost cut me off, you know, on the road, and I'm so grateful that I hit the brake in time and we didn't have an accident. I wonder what's going on for him. I hope that he makes it to where he's going safely. And teaching people to respond in that way rather than that, and then you talk about it all day, 3 weeks later, you're still recreating that stressful response in your body, right? So it's so, so important. And the circadian rhythm, we talked about that before. We'll talk more about that when I show you some adrenal tests. But this cortisol is highest in the first thing in the morning. Well, you'll get it later. It's highest first thing in the morning to arouse you, goes all the way down, gets low at midnight so you can sleep. It's in there. But we'll talk, I'm going to show you some real examples. That's why, I don't mean that you should be getting it all that quickly, but that's enough. It's like the presentation I went to a couple of months ago. It was like, boom, and then there was a study, and then there was, I'm like, okay, effects of stress on heart rhythm. And that was a weekend thing that I went home from going, okay, now what? Do I have to go back and read all his studies, and then I don't remember because he's not talking about it? Frustration and appreciation. This is just the way stress affects heart rhythm. They hook people up to heart monitors and put them in a stressful situation. That's what the heart rate looks like. It's up, it's down. Yeah, we think that we have a heart rate of 60, say, that every second our heart's beating, right? No. If you are, then you're dead. I mean, you're close to dead. You're not dead. Obviously, it's beating. But when you're frustrated, it's like 42, 87, 36, 122. It's just like all over the place. And when you hook people up, I have a heart math monitor. I should have brought that. But it's called the M wave. You can get it from heartmath.org. Anyway, when you put people in, you get them to breathe and appreciate like we did this morning, that's what their heart rate does. And you can see that. That's a great tool, especially if you work a lot with people one-on-one and it stresses a big deal. Like you work with executives, especially, and things like, and moms. You can hook them up and you can actually take them through that breathing that I shared with you and see it change right there. And that's it's just rhythmic. So in a healthy person, it's not a straight line every second. It's rhythmically nice. And that's what appreciation does. And that's why it's so powerful to be in appreciation. I got a near miss. I'm so appreciative that I hit the brake in time. That's what it does to secretory IgA. Secretory IgA is the immune system lining to your mucous membranes. So it's your respiratory tract, your GI tract. And when secretory IgA goes down, you're not protected. You're not protected from microbes. The normal flora, you know, a little bit of an imbalance in the normal flora, you're not going to be able to kill off the pathogens and keep it steady, and that causes a lot of problems. So secretory IgA goes down when you're under stress. And when we look at the adrenal stress index test later, you'll see that when secretory IgA is a really good monitor of how long-term the stress is. Somebody will say, oh, I don't think that's a problem, right? I had a bad day that day when you did the test. So let's go look at your secretory IgA because overall, you know, it's going to be, because it's a compound of the whole day. You've been having a problem for a long time. Your secretory IgA is depleted and you'll see it go up. So you have better protection. So the sleep hormone family. Everybody thinks of sleep. You're having problems sleeping, the hormone to take is melatonin, right? We're not having enough melatonin. Well, why don't you have enough melatonin? Well, melatonin, remember we talked serotonin yesterday? Serotonin is a precursor of melatonin. So if somebody is on an SSRI, they're probably going to have sleep problems, you know, that led to them needing the SSRI. They're not making enough melatonin. So you look at the pathway. Well, how does this happen? Well, the 5-HTP, give them some B6, goes to serotonin, goes downstream. That's part of it. Not always as simple as that, but that's a starting point for looking at that. Michaeline will talk more about methylation and genetics later, and she's specifically going to focus more on the hormones, but that has a lot to do with the neurotransmitters as well. Thyroid has a lot to do with neurotransmitters as well. So dopamine and serotonin are very intimately connected with thyroid. And we don't have the time to go into the depth of biochemistry here, but we do that in my programs, the longer programs. Okay, so, so we have definitely, I want you to go through this chart and just kind of get a sense of it later, but the melatonin is just this, the starting point. And you've got growth hormone, and growth hormone needs to spike about an hour after you fall asleep. That has to do with the growth and repair. You've got all these other hormones. Progesterone can help to induce sleep. They found that if you give somebody, if they're deficient in progesterone, and you give them a little bit of liquid sublingual type of progesterone right before they go to sleep, that can help them if that's a problem. So there's a lot of things that you can do. There's other herbs and nutrients that hugely affects sleep, but these are all the hormones, and we go through like a lot of detail in that in the IRSPT, where we have a whole module on just the sleep hormones. So these are the, in general, the ones that are important: insulin and glucagon, maintaining blood sugar. Because if the blood sugar is spiking and dropping and spiking and dropping while you sleep, you're going to wake up. You know, wake up starving in the middle of the night. So if you have people that are waking up, that could be that. And what happens is when the blood sugar drops, if it drops significantly, it can trigger an emergency response. So you got a burst of adrenaline and cortisol right in the middle of the night, and they're like, woke up, right? And if you were to take their blood sugar at that time, it might even be high, right? So I sometimes have people do that. I say, well, to take when you wake up in the middle of the night, just test your blood sugar. And see, if it's high, it's because, not because you have a problem with too high blood sugar, probably it was going too low. Now, it could have gone too low because you ate right before going to bed, and you had a spike of insulin, and then it did its job, and it overdid, and then the sugar went too low in the middle of the night. The glucagon didn't get in there. The liver, it could be toxic liver, right? If your liver is backed up, and glucagon says, hey, release some of that glycogen, I need it, and the liver's not working properly, it's kind of sluggish, you won't get that response. So just understanding a little bit about how this goes will help you to be able to decipher what's going on for your client, rather than just, oh, here, have some melatonin. I'm a natural therapist here. Have some melatonin and some valerian, and that'll put you to sleep. That can help, but let's just get at the root cause. If the root cause is their stress, and their, you got to get them to respond. And as I started this whole thing with the adrenals, when you work with them from a biochemical standpoint, respond beautifully and repair beautifully rather quickly. 3 months, you can see it. But if they're continuing to light the fire the whole time, it's not going to help, right? You're doing all this stuff to support, and yes, your support is going to keep their adrenals from getting worse, but you got to take away the stress, whether it be that physiologic or getting them to do meditation, heart math, whatever your favorite way of working with that person is. So the cholesterol, we talked about growth hormone. And DHEA is growth and repair again. And cortisol, right, they're the same precursor. And when the cortisol levels go up, the DHEA goes down. Once the cortisol level settles down, the DHEA can come back up. Leptin and ghrelin, we talked about leptin yesterday. We didn't talk too much about ghrelin, but ghrelin is secreted by the stomach to say, I'm hungry. But here's the thing, you know all those interactions? This is a little tidbit. If someone eats immediately when they're hungry, or eats in anticipation of being hungry, which a lot of people are told to do. Don't allow yourself to get hungry. You don't get the ghrelin secreted. Ghrelin triggers growth hormone. Why? Because growth hormone will burn fat. So I'm hungry, burn me some fat, I need some fuel. So you have an overweight patient, you want them to feel hungry. And what I tell them to do is, once you start to feel the hunger, pour yourself a glass of water, drink the water, it'll temper it without turning it off completely. You'll get that growth hormone going, you'll burn it, and eat. If you're still hungry a half an hour later, eat. Sometimes it's not even hunger, right? It's thirst. So you just get them to drink. So that's a trick, because you want that growth hormone to happen. And that's why if I get hungry, I go, oh, I got an itch. I got an itch in a place I can't scratch in public, so I'm not going to do it. I'll do it later or hope it goes away. I'm hungry and I don't have access to food. Oh, well, it's just another sensation. It's just an itch. Just ignore it and go back to it when you are in an opportune place. Because people say, I'm at the airport and I'm hungry. Well, eat later. Or carry something with you if you happen to be in that dysregulation state still, you know, but eventually you get to the point where, oh, hunger, it's just another sensation. I'm feeling hungry. Oh, that's an interesting information, which says to me, seek out food at the next opportunity. And dog food would not be food, right? If you're at the airport and all they had to eat was dog food, who would eat it? If you're at the airport, you're not on a desert island for 70 days and you have dog food, you'd probably eat it, right? But at the airport, you wouldn't, right? Why would you reach for a Mars bar or a burger or some of the really bad choices at the airport? It's dog food. And that's an analogy you can give your patients, right? If it was dog food, you wouldn't need it. If it was cardboard, you wouldn't need it. That stuff isn't food. That stuff is not food. It's food look-alike, smell-alike, possibly taste-alike, but it's not food because it doesn't nourish. And it hurts beyond not nourishing. So just learn. And that's not something that people are going to pick up right away, right? But they can. They can get there. And I know that people are saying to me now, wow, it's easy now. It's not easy. And there's tricks you can do. We teach a lot of that in the IRSPT, that all the little herbs and like you can give them chromium and that helps to keep things steady in between. And there's certain essential oils. doTERRA has a blend called Slim and Sassy that you put in your water and have them drink that and it keeps the blood sugar steady throughout the day. So there's a lot of things like that you can do as band-aids and crutches and make sure you let them know these are just band-aids and crutches. We want to fix the underlying problem. And eventually I want you to just treat hunger as a sensation. Right? We put out protein powders and green powders yesterday in case people did get hungry between lunch and dinner. Did anybody get hungry between lunch and dinner? But personally and professionally, I would tell you, not a good idea. But I'm thinking, if that's there, you're not going to go run off to the snack bar to say, I'm hungry and dinner is not for 2 hours. I need something. Go get a protein drink or with the green powder and hold you over. Right? Makes sense? But that doesn't mean I advocate doing that. I really think that the spacing between the meals is where the beauty happens and the healing happens, right? The fasting between the meals. Okay. So reproduction. This is what everybody thinks of when we think hormones, right? Estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. So I say, oh, I work, what do you do? I work with nutritional endocrinology. I'm a hormone, I work with hormones. And people go, oh, my friend has PMS, you think you could help her? Oh, I have this painful menopause. That's what people go. And I went there myself when a coach said to me, I want you to specialize in hormones. And I'm like, I just don't want to work with menopausal women or PMSy people all day. That's not fun for me. It's like working with depression. Is that all I want to work with? Sure, I work with people with depression, but do I want to specialize in depression? It would be depressing. So that's where I went with this too, but you saw already, right? This is at the end. How many hormones have we talked about before we got to this? And if you fix all the others, there's not a whole lot you can do here, but the stuff I want to share with you is the diet nutritional stuff that you can do to support these hormone pathways that will help the estrogen stay safe. Because the problem with excess estrogen is proliferation. Estrogen is proliferative. Proliferative meaning it makes things grow. So hormone-sensitive tumors, ovarian, breast, those sorts of things, testicular, prostate, they can be affected by the hormones. And estrogen's not the bad guy. Estrogen is very important. But we need to be careful. The whole hormone study thing they did back, everybody's just stopped doing hormone replacement. Well, they were using horse urine and synthetic progesterone. Not the same, right? And I'm not a proponent of going right to doing bioidenticals. You got to look at their diet, their thoughts, their lifestyle, the nutrients, the supplements, and mostly you can get it, but sometimes people need it. Well, okay, somebody brought up a question yesterday. Well, what about somebody who doesn't have a thyroid? Well, what do you think? Do you think I'm in favor of bioidentical hormone replacement in that case? Yes, Because no matter how much we do to stimulate the thyroid to produce, and no matter how much iodine and tyrosine is in the body, if you don't have the organ, you cannot make it. Okay? Simple. So if somebody's had a hysterectomy and they've had their ovaries removed and they're 30, do you think I would recommend they be on hormone replacement? Absolutely. Don't try to do it naturally. If they're 60 and they've had their have to have their ovaries removed, do they need bioidentical hormone replacement? Maybe not. Maybe restoring their adrenals and getting their adrenals to make some of the background levels of progesterone estrogen you need could work temporarily, a couple of years, to just get them the symptomatic relief so they don't go downhill, get their bone support. But yeah, you gotta do it. So that's where complementary and alternative comes in. Now there are ways, and I teach it in the all-day class I do on hormone, on the reproductive hormones, that there are ways that you can do it without having to have a license for a prescription. That there are companies, Bezwecken, for example, and Dr. Helen Pensanti, that they have these little drops that are plant-based, that somehow the FDA has got, let them get away with using, and they're highly effective. They have adrenal, they have they don't have thyroid, but Dr. Jonathan Wright has a thyroid glandular that has metabolically active thyroid stuff. So you can work with people when you learn the products and you experiment and tell them, you know, if that's really what you want to do, this is something you might, this is stuff that might help, and you can play with that. So you don't, but otherwise you have to go to get a prescription written to do that, a nurse practitioner, a physician's assistant, and an MD. So if there are people in your town that are more holistically oriented, that they're willing to work with you, not steal the patient away from you and just say, oh, let's just put them on this stuff and they'll be done, that you can feel confident that they support the complementary work that you're doing, that they're willing to write a prescription. So these are all of the hormones that are involved, right? Progesterone protects. It protects, there's certain types of estrogen receptors, which we go into more detail in that class, estrogen receptors alpha and beta, and certain things protect and certain things hurt those. The betas are the good, you know, the more supportive ones, but the alphas are needed, and we're not going to go into all that detail here, right? You can do that at your own pace if you join me with following up with studying with me. You can learn that up the wazoo and in a nice, comfortable environment where we have a lot of time for question and answers, and you bring your cases to me to help with. But in the meantime, progesterone tends to be more protective and estrogen is proliferative. But you'll see this is just a repeat of that same thing and shows you specifically how pregnenolone steals away, cortisol steals away from the estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. You just highlighted it on there. But let's look at estrogen. And again, don't feel like you have to memorize all this. You'll have a full-size version of it. You can study it. But I want to show you the effects of food and environment on estrogen. People think of estrogen as estrogen, right? If your clients know that there's estrogen. Who here knows that there's three main types of estrogen? Good. E1, E2, E3 for short. Estrone, estradiol, and estriol. Estriol is a thing Jonathan Wright wrote years ago, a paper on estriol, the forgotten estrogen. It's the protective one. You want more of that than you want of the other. And there's a ratio. There's something called the estrogen quotient that we learn to measure. But the estrone, estradiol, estriol. Okay, so if you look, if you want to get conversion downstream metabolites, the four series of downstream metabolites are toxic, as are the 16s, where the twos are protective. So if you have a buildup of the fours or the 16s, you're going to have somebody who's at risk of breast cancer or uterine cancer, other kinds of ovarian cancer, hormone-related cancers, more ovarian than uterine. So you've got that. Well, what is it? What is it that's going to produce more four? Low magnesium. Magnesium's super important for this system. So if somebody who's low in magnesium, they don't eat green vegetables, they don't take extra magnesium to make up for the fact that they don't eat green vegetables. Like if you have somebody who refuses to eat green vegetables, make sure you put them on magnesium and then work with them to see the value of eating the green vegetables, juicing, smoothies. We've getting a lot of magnesium here, aren't we? Yes? So lack of magnesium will cause it to go down that pathway and become carcinogenic. Same thing on the other side. There's a whole slew of nutrients that help it to go, that hinder that enhance going down to estrone, right? So you've got obesity, low thyroid function. With a low thyroid function, you're not going to have it going down to the protective estriol. It's going to be staying there. So you've got these things that cause more of the estrone to go to the 16-hydroxy. But not all is lost if it goes to 16-hydroxy, because part of that, as much as possible of that 16-hydroxy, goes down to the estriol, which is protective. But what is a very key nutrient that's very often low in people is iodine, because we don't live near the sea, the soils are depleted, and who eats enough sea vegetables? Except the people in this room, probably. But when people come into you, are they having a fair amount of sea vegetables? Who sees people who come in and they're like, oh yeah, I eat kelp every day and I love my nori? No, but that's stuff you want to teach them about. And if not, you do here in one of the tests for thyroid function. Let me drink more water. Okay. One of the tests for thyroid function is the iodine load test. Okay, and that's listed in your iodine, in your thyroid stuff. So if somebody's low, that ratio will be off. And there's a specific ratio on the test, and if it's below one, then you know that they're at risk. So iodine, super important. See, all these nutrients, all these foods. So you'll see why when you look at this chart, why when you just get people doing the basics, you see improvements, because you're protecting the pathways, right? And cruciferous vegetables, huge, estrone down to this protective, the 2-hydroxy. You've got all these nutrients, and cruciferous vegetables are amazing. Indole-3-carbinol. Is anybody not familiar with DIM or indole-3-carbinol? Raise your hand. Okay. These are, when you eat cruciferous vegetables, broccoli, kale, cauliflower, things like that, when they're metabolized, these are downstream metabolites. DIM and indole-3-carbinol. There's a whole category of chemicals called sulforaphanes that are protective. So if you look on research and you say cancer protection and broccoli sprouts, you're going to get a huge body of information on that. Well, sulforaphane is that chemical that helps to protect. The indole-3-carbinols and the DIMs are in that metabolic pathway. So people take those as supplements, but you get your people eating more. Sometimes protectively, initially, you get them to take the supplements as you're transitioning them to eating more. Get the idea? Okay. We good on this one? Same thing, this is just another way of looking at it so you see it in a different way. So it's the estradiol and the estrone over here, down to the estriol. These are the children and the grandchildren, and just to show you that protective. Soy is controversial because a lot of it is GMO, and there's a lot of studies that show the protective effects of soy. There's a lot of protective studies that don't. A lot of the stuff that shows that soy is not good, they are using soy powder protein tofu as opposed to fermented soy products like tempeh or miso. So tempeh and miso can be very protective, and the other stuff in excess can be proliferative. And so I just tell people, if you're going to eat soy, do tempeh or miso. Okay, and it can be protective. There's a lot of studies that show that. And then flax is another one. It's like, flax, yes, estrogenic, no. The jury's out on flax, but I believe that flax is a very helpful food. So then the ratio, we measure the ratio, the 216. It's increased if the 216 ratio is less than 2, meaning that as it gets lower, meaning that you have more 2 and less 16, you have decreased risk of breast cancer. But it doesn't go, it's like not one of those things where it's more is better, less is better, whatever. It's more of the Goldilocks principle. It has to be just right, because if you have more more than 16 in excess, then you have risk of osteoporosis. We've all heard about that estrogen, that as people go into menopause, they have more risk of osteoporosis, and it has to do with these ratios. And all this is measurable. Yes, so the two, you want more 2 than 16, right? But it's not to the so extreme that there's no 16. So 16 has protective effects in bone, but it has to be in balance. So if somebody comes back with 0.16 and a lot of 2, they may be at higher risk of bone loss, right? So it's, like I said, the Goldilocks principle of right, just right, not too little, not too much. Yeah. Yeah, and they're also here, okay. Right? The 2 and the, the 16. 2 and 16, yeah. So 2 is the good guy, 16, and 2 and 4 and 16. So think about it. I had a hard time remembering which was which. For a while, I'm like, okay, which one is that? 4 times 4 is 16. So remember it that way. The 4 and the 16 are the proliferative ones, the ones that are negative, and the 2 is the good one. And this is all happening in the liver. Like all this metabolism ties in with what Michaeline's going to talk about with genetics. And then the males, not as interesting, but we've got high... it's not, right? Men, well, who had it all? Sorry, I apologize in advance to all the men in the room. Women are complex beings, right? We have this complexity of emotions and emotional responses and all this stuff. And men don't. Somebody sent me an awesome little email that talked about, you know, women are like, and they're this age, they're like this, and it went through all these things about women as they age. And they said, men from 0 to 80, they're all about their nuts. So, anyway... they're not as complex. So understand that. Be patient with them. They don't have the depth of complexity as we do. Like I said, I apologize in advance. The men in this room are different than the men in society, right? They're all just really, they're in touch with their emotions and they're interested in this, and so very different. Okay, so DHEA goes down to these intermediates, androstenedione, down to testosterone, down to DHT. DHT is very powerful, but can be problematic, okay? Excessive DHT can create the problems with prostate cancer, okay? And a lot of times, if that's elevated, like you'll see somebody who's got, if they just do total testosterone with all the metabolites, they may look fine. But you're like, they have no sex drive, they have no motivation. You know, men go through, I said last night, well, if women go through menopause, why don't men go through womenopause, right? But so anyway, it's really actually officially called andropause. And men do go through that. And you will see men, you know, the women might be complaining that their husband has no motivation, no drive. And I don't mean just sex drive. I mean like drive in life and motivation. And it happens when testosterone levels get too low. And a lot of times the testosterone is low because it's getting converted to the downstream metabolite DHT, which is very potent and it's important. But in excess, it's like the bad estrogens. It's proliferative and dangerous. Yeah. Male pattern baldness, you'll hear that male pattern baldness is caused by testosterone, right? Oh, yes, that man has hair loss. He's more virile. He has more testosterone. He has more DHT testosterone, which causes the hair loss. It's not the testosterone, the active testosterone, and it's the more dangerous one. So that was like, well, why these? You would think that these guys without hair have higher sex drive than the rest of them, but not really true. So anyway. Okay, so back to that, pulling it all together, the hormones. We're not going to dwell on this, but you see, we've kind of made sense of this now. As you go back through this chart, if you want to do a little exercise, is just go through and circle the families and just kind of identify the families for yourself. And you'll see that we've talked about most of these hormones in some way or form. And again, you don't have to have a working knowledge of this in the depth, but knowing that they exist, knowing that hormones exist that do these functions, that if somebody's having a problem, that your brain's going, ah, you know, the whole detective thing is super, super important. And this, again, this I just put in for your reference, just for fun more than anything else. I don't really work with these a lot. These hormones like the natural, I can't even say it, the one for the peptide for the heart, the natriuretic or whatever. You do see ADH, antidiuretic hormone. I have worked with somebody who had, it's a diabetes insipidus. Has anybody heard of that? It's a condition where this person is like thirsty all the time and they're peeing all the time. And I had somebody, she was drinking like 3 quarts of water overnight. And it's kept her from having a headache. She was just peeing everything away. And it was and we never even really figured out the cause other than we suspected it was an environmental thing at work because she finally said, I'm out of here, and it went away. And it was, there was a very toxic environment. People had been leaving. They weren't responding to the environment. So I think it was something was just throwing. It was an estrogen disruptor, a hormone disruptor that was affecting her ADH levels. But that's, it's somebody, if you're finding that they're drinking and drinking and drinking and peeing and peeing and peeing, you want to look there, and that's in the pituitary. Okay. It's also called vasopressin. Vasopressin, ADH, antidiuretic hormone, same thing. It affects the kidneys. It affects the kidneys up here, not down here. Just for your reference, some of those others. So if you hear them or you see somebody's having an issue, you might start looking there. And then hierarchies, again. I mean, these are the top four, but sleep is super important. If somebody's not sleeping, you really do need to address that some way, shape, or form, even if you can't get to the underlying cause initially to help them to sleep better. But the sleep is often related to the other hormones being out of balance, the reproductive hormones, low progesterone, problems with too high a cortisol. So that's the direction that I would like to go in. We got to be good detectives. At bottom line, you've got to be able to just look and say, okay, what can be happening with this person? What is the underlying? And you have your charts that you can go back and look to. I refer to those estrogen charts all the time. If I'm reading the thing I'm on, this isn't consistent. How does this work? And then you look back and, oh, maybe we need to work on these particular nutrients. Okay, so I'm going to give you, I don't like to call them protocols, and we'll give you some of those, and we'll go through those tomorrow, because protocol seems like cookie cutter, right? And it's not cookie cutter, but it's general guidelines, let's just say, on how to address people with the different problems. And again, you can go away right away and start working with these assessments and some of these other protocols and some of the labs. You can right away start to do these and say, oh, okay, let me run this test, or to have has your doctor run that test. We have to be good detectives. It's really important. And it's really important to be able to, turn to people and say, hey, I've got this case, and this is what's happening. This is what I'm thinking. What do you think? Do you think I'm missing something? I've had that happen. I talk to colleagues all the time, and they call me, and they'll say this and this and this. Oh, you can just do this. And so everybody's had a different range of experience, right? You may have seen a lot of people with depression, and you might have seen a lot of people with gut stuff, and you can share that, and we create that with our forums and all that. As if you haven't figured it out by now, hormones interact with everything that we put into our body, the nutrients, the foods, the stress, the environment, the digestion, the sleep, and the other hormones. And as Michaeline will talk about in her thing, is that genetics is a huge piece of it, and the good news is about 80%, maybe more, is modifiable because it's epigenetic expression. So the good news is when somebody says to you, oh, well, my mother had breast cancer and my sister had cardiovascular disease and all my family members died in this age of this disease, I'm going to get it too, it ain't true. Okay, you can modify it. It's epigenetic expression, and Michaeline will handle that beautifully. So we're going to go into more of the assessments, and we had a lot of time. We're going to do most of the assessment stuff after the break, after Michaeline and after the break, and then tomorrow there's a lot of extra time. I just wanted to make sure you had those foundations. Next time through, we're going to give way more time to that in the schedule. But I just wanted to get you there. There's a lot to learn, and when you know the basics, you start to it just starts to open up. And the internet is a great source of information. My webinars, my programs, the people that, who raise your hand if you've been you're an ERSPC person. We've got people back here, Michaeline and Ghislaine and Jan and Mary, and they have been through the year-long certification program, and we're drawing to an end of that. And they have learned all this. Michaeline is especially good. She's a sponge, and you'll hear it when she gets up here. You're going to be blown away by what she's learned. And Michaeline is not trained as a health coach. She was not trained as a doctor. She's a master's degree in psychology and was a counselor. And she'll share with you the story of why she got into this, but that's her mind. And I have people that come into the program and say, well, I'm not of this, I'm not of that. Can I do this? And I go, well, yeah, it depends. And I'll talk to you and see if you have the ability to be a detective and dig and care and have compassion. But some people just don't have that left brain ability. You know, they're just an artist. And they can be a health counselor, but they're not going to do it at the depth here. Right, they're going to teach people about what to eat, but they may not understand why they're teaching them that, but they're going to get results anyway, okay? So just knowing that is really important. So these are all the things. Michaeline's going to talk about the genetics and how accessible it is to you. She'll share with you how accessible it is to you and your clients. And we're going to talk about these things after the break, after Michaeline, about the specific history taking. You have a book of resources, and I'm going to guide you through it and how you can use those resources. And then tomorrow, we're going to pull it all together and show you how you can get started and give people things that they can do right away to make their changes. So thank you.